Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, November 8th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Election Day is Here. This first article is entitled, City of Midland Mayor, The Battle to be Midland's Next Mayor, by Stuart Doreen. Today is Election Day. Residents in the city can vote from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Here is a look at the City of Midland's mayoral race. Political credentials. Lori Blong is the current city councilwoman. Morales is a former two-term mayor. Dixon is a newcomer to Midland's political scene. What they stand for. Blong. She was the first person to enter the race, making her intention to run the day after Patrick Peyton said he wouldn't seek a second term. She talked about the city taking care of business and not getting into crazy projects. She also praised public-private partnerships and collaborations, talking about her experience with Midland Trail Park, the Hogan Park Project, and the Wildcatter Trail bike path from West Midland to East Odessa. Dixon. The retired carpenter is an outsider to the race. Water and infrastructure were his issues in the beginning, but he also was just that person wanting to give back to the community where he has lived for around 47 years. Morales. Experience, specifically his work on the city council, as an at-large councilman and former mayor, is what he is running on. The former restaurant owner and now licensed insurance agent started the campaign wanting to look at the everyday issues, roads, housing, infrastructure, and quality of life. Top issues. During the League of Women Voters Forum, a question from the crowd about the Hogan Park Project was asked, and Jerry Morales talked about more transparency needed. From there, the issue took off with other council members, the mayor, and members of the Quality of Place Conservancy weighing in on the issue. What seems to be the sticking point is the costs of maintenance for the potential 65-year deal between the Conservancy and the city. Blong has talked about the steps taken to engage the community on what's coming. Morales has continued to say Midland taxpayers need to know more about projects like this. What is known is that the city is planning to give $10 million and around $28 million in private donations have been raised. There is no formal deal between the city and the Conservancy. What else to know? Blong has spent more than any Midland City Council candidate in history and will likely raise more than any before it is all said and done, more than $300,000. Peyton announced with less than 3 weeks left in the filing period that he wouldn't seek re-election. He had announced earlier in the year that he would seek re-election, but campaign finance reports showed he didn't raise any money ahead of the filing period. He quickly endorsed Blong after her announcement. She even announced her candidacy in the same location he announced 3 years ago. Morales entered the race toward the end of the filing period, and because of Peyton's late announcement and Blong's work to garner support over the previous months, he started behind and worked diligently to catch up. He still raised more than $150,000 in an abbreviated period. This article is entitled Midland City Council District 4. Stretcher Burks, Garrity on City Ballot in West Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Amy Stretcher Burks versus Jim Garrity. Position, City of Midland, District 4. What they stand for. Communication, specifically communicating issues to people in her district. Birx has stated that the Nueva Vista episode showed what a representative should and shouldn't do for residents who want information and want to be part of the process. She also stated she will prioritize first responders and promote investments in critical infrastructure. Garrity stated he wanted to hire and retain more police officers. He also stated quicker infrastructure development was needed to advance upcoming projects and handle the growth happening in Midland. Garrity said he will work to change the existing process for major development plans to be presented to the city. Top issue. Both got involved in city politics as an issue hit close to home. The Nueva Vista zoning issue came about when a property owner wanted to sell his land to people who wanted to put a housing development, around 626 lots, where the golf course currently resides. The land is adjacent to the Grasslands and Grasslands West developments. Both have cited their respective roles in helping to defeat the zoning issue and what they would have done differently. The rights of an individual to protect their property from bad development should equal the rights of a landowner who wants to sell or develop their property, Garrity previously stated. As your city council member, communication, approachability, and transparency will be extremely important to me. I will make myself available to meet with constituents and hear their concerns, Birx said. What else to know? These candidates are neighbors in the Grassland Estates West. Garrity served as chairman of the Grassland Estates West HOA during the Nueva Vista debate. Birx is the daughter of former city attorney and Midland Development Corporation board member Keith Stretcher. Birx raised $72,315 through reporting periods. Garrity is the owner of the Domino's Pizza stores in and around Midland. Where is District 4? Generally West Midland, bordered by Greentree Boulevard to the north, Midland Drive from Greentree to Briarwood, Wadley to Andrews Highway, and Thomason to Wall Street, Holiday Hill from Briarwood to Loop 250, and Midkiff Road from Illinois to Thomason to the east. Business 20 to the south, and city areas to FM 1788 to the west. Areas include Midland International Airport, Beale Park, the Scarborough Sports Complex, Grasslands, Manor Park, C.J. Kelly Park, Los Patios, the Bush Tennis Center, Great House, Briarwood, Saddle Club Ranch Estates, and the southern part of Greentree. This article is entitled MISD District 3, Tommy Bishop versus Reagan Hinojos, by Stuart Doreen. Position, Midland ISD District 3. Political credentials, Tommy Bishop is the longest-serving member of the Midland ISD School Board. Reagan Hinojos serves on the advisory board of Idea Travis. What they stand for. Hinojos talked about inspiring through action when he entered the race and helping to lift the district so it delivers on the promise that MISD offers. Bishop has stated his position to outsourcing Midland ISD schools to charters. He also talked about showing residents Midland ISD has the ability to care for its investments. Top issue. As the campaigns kicked off, the Midland ISD board voted to allow Idea Travis to expand into the 9th through 12th grades. Bishop voted against this. Two charters, Idea Travis and Houston Collegiate Prep, led the district in terms of improvement made on TEA testing during the 2021-22 school year. Both schools improved by more than 35 points, and both nearly record A grades. Hinojos stated he believes school choice gives parents control over the quality of their child's education and keeps their school district accountable by using their child's attendance to reward schools that are achieving with school attendance funding. Bishop said he does not support expanding additional in-district partnerships with third-party providers because he believes that the district has the right administrators, campus leaders, and teachers on staff to continue improving academic courses. What else to know? Hinojos holds a fundraising advantage over Bishop, $37,575 to $26,198. Hinojos has commented on Bishop's four terms on the board and the academic decline during that time. Bishop has noted that Hinojos rarely spoke openly against what was taking place inside Midland ISD prior to his run for the District 3 seat. Where is District 3? District 3 is bordered by Andrews Highway, State Highway 191, to the north, Midkiff Road from Golf Course to Illinois, and Bidland Drive from Illinois to Wall Street to the east, Illinois and then Wall Street to the south, and beyond Farm to Market Road 1788 to the west. The district also includes areas around the Scarborough Sports Complex, Alamo Junior High, the Doug Russell Aquatic Park, Beale Park, and the Midland International Airport. This article is entitled MISD District 5, Brandon Hodges versus John Trichetti III, by Stuart Doreen. Position, Midland ISD District 5. Political credentials. John Trichetti III has represented District 5 for the last 4 years. Hodges led the effort to defeat the 2019 school bond with his group, Better Bond for Midland. What they stand for. Trichetti stands for literacy. Whether it was as the director of Midland County Libraries or as an executive director of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, that will be a top issue. He has also helped create awareness about Midland ISD's nine-figure recapture payments and working with organizations outside the district to better education for all. Hodges wants Midland ISD to work on being more accountable for money spent on maintaining facilities, including the $106 million in deferred maintenance needed now. He also called student outcomes and discipline priorities when he decided to run. Top issue. While they're back and forth on topics like critical race theory / social-emotional learning practices make for good viewing, the winner of the District 5 race will serve as a likely leader on the next school board. Trichetti is the board vice president, while Hodges has been active on the district's facilities committee. With Rick Davis leaving the district, there will be a void of leadership to help Board President Brian Murray, and both candidates provide expertise, even if they don't see eye to eye on past board decisions, the certain spending decisions, the 2019 bond, and the amount of interaction that has taken place with the community. Trichetti has institutional knowledge of what the previous board accomplished and its work on programs like Lone Star Governance. Hodges can expertly debate educational policy at the local and state level. He also represents voters that the district currently struggles to connect with. What else to know? Trichetti leads Hodges in overall fundraising, $44,100 to $30,850, through two reporting periods. Hodges is one of the two operators of the Facebook page MISD Homework. Trichetti has five children who have either graduated from or still attend MISD schools. Hodges is married to a current MISD teacher, and his mother was a former teacher in Midland. Where is District 5? District 5 is generally north central and northeast Midland, and includes areas around Midland College, the State Highway 191 corridor, Polo Park, Saddle Club, Mockingbird Heights, and Santa Rita Elementary. This article is entitled MISD District 6, Sarah Burleson versus Carrie McNeil, by Stuart Doreen. Position, Midland ISD School Board, District 6. What they stand for. Burleson stated that the district needs an educator on the board who knows firsthand what it is like to be in the classroom every day with children at all levels of learning. She also said a student's first mindset is required to see better student outcomes. McNeil states that the school board members should listen better to their constituents, and that would help with the struggles taking place. Time and time again, I have met with people living in our district who have felt unheard and felt their voices ignored. This must change. Top issue. Burleson has made her previous experience as an educator as a pillar of her campaign. She stated, time spent at schools like Fannin and Carver will allow her to understand the issues and know how to ask the hard questions. I can help restore broken trust with our teachers on the front lines and rebuild a collaborative, problem-solving spirit, which is key to making durable changes in our system and improving all student outcomes. McNeil has taken issue with the idea that the district knows best. Her constant message is that while she is not an educator, she will be an investigator. She will engage with the constituents. Time and time again, I have met people living in our district who have felt unheard and felt their voices ignored. This must change. What else to know? Burleson led in fundraising $57,817 to $27,275 after the October campaign finance period. Both are seeking to replace Rick Davis. Where is District 6? District 6 is bordered by Golf Course Road, Andrews Highway, State Highway 191, to State Highway 158 to the south, parts of State Highway 158 to the west, County Road 50 from Dumfries to Navasota, Briarwood Avenue from Navasota to Holiday Hill, and Wadley Avenue from Loop 250 to Garfield to the north. The border to the east is Garfield Road between Wadley and Golf Course. Areas include Vaskin Park, Legacy High School, Manor Park, Grasslands Estates, Nueva Vista Golf Course, C.J. Kelly Park, and Saddle Club Ranch Estates. This article is entitled MCT Features Photographer Durbin in Gallery by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Family and friends gathered in the Midland Community Theater lobby Saturday evening to support beloved local photographer James Durbin. In 2018, after closing a 7-year chapter at the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Durbin and his partner Karina founded the Oilfield Photographer, Inc. There, the digital creator generates iconic snapshots of the West Texas oil and gas industry, showing the hidden beauty behind the steel underpinnings. Filling both theater halls, the prints remain on display through November 12th, along with Of Men and Cars. They are available for purchase, with a portion going to MCT. Durbin said he remains thankful and appreciative of the community and the opportunities. To learn more about the Oilfield Photographer, Inc., or to book with Durbin, visit theoilfieldphotographer.com. The Midland Community Theater is located at 2000 West Wadley Avenue. It is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mondays through Fridays. This article is entitled MDC Disperses $150,580 for UTPB Business Incubator Program by Mella McEwen. Midland Development Corporation board members agreed Monday to authorize payment to the University of Texas Permian Basin in support of its incubator and makerspace program. board members agreed to pay $150,580.70 to UTPB as part of its 2020 commitment of $2 million to fund renovations of the Center for Energy and Economic Diversification at State Highway 191 and Farm to Market Road 1788. The agreement was amended this spring to require quarterly updates on the renovations before payments were approved. Brian Shedd, Executive Director of UTPB's Office of Innovation and Commercialization, updated board members on major completions to renovations, including all final walls are up, drywalled and mudded, and final furniture selected, with delivery expected in March 2023. He said construction is expected to be completed in January 2023 and the building opens for full operation after furniture has been delivered. In addition, Shedd reported a leasing agreement has been finalized, allowing companies to lease the private offices in CEED, which he called a major milestone, allowing the incubator space to accommodate companies. His office is also negotiating industry collaborations, including with NGL Energy Partners and ConocoPhillips. Collaboration and business startup support are two of the four missions of Shedd's office, with the others being product development in the makerspace, where products can be designed and tested and prototyped, and there is access to manufacturing space and equipment and technology transfer. Other business startup efforts include assisting with the Midland Entrepreneurial Challenge, which is underway with 48 participants. Shedd's office will also participate in Global Entrepreneurship next week, a food entrepreneur event, and will host the High-Speed Aerospace Transportation Workshop at UTPB's Engineering Building December 8th to 9th. This article is entitled DPS, Odessan Dies in I-20 Rollover, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A 46-year-old Odessa man died Friday afternoon after his truck veered off an Interstate 20 frontage road, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Saudi Gomez Cabrera was traveling east on the south frontage road of Interstate Highway 20 near mile marker 47 in Reeves County around 12:40 p.m. At that point, his 2018 Westar 470 truck veered off the roadway into the South Barrow Ditch. Cabrera then overcorrected and veered into the North Barrow Ditch, where his vehicle rolled over, according to DPS. Cabrera was transported to Reeves County Hospital, where he was pronounced deceased. DPS reported there were high winds at the time, and Cabrera wasn't wearing a seatbelt. This article is entitled, Midlanders Outside Loop 250 Have a Greater Impact on Voter Turnout, by Stuart Doreen. There wasn't much change from the precincts in-person voters came from during the early voting period. The Midland County Elections Office reported that 13 precincts, a little more than a quarter of all precincts across Midland, accounted for more than 54.6% of all in-person voters during the early voting period. The top precinct during the early voting period was 204, which includes Saddle Club Estates, Polo Park, and the area south and east of Midland Country Club. It was the top turnout district with 1,532 voters. Following the North Midland precinct was Precinct 110, Grasslands to Los Patios, with 1,319 voters. Precinct 411, Green Tree, Briarwood, and Great House, with 1,284, and Precinct 408, Mockingbird Heights, and areas around Cardinal Lane, Santa Rita Elementary, and Midland Classical Academy in North Midland, with 1,205. Combined, the four precincts accounted for nearly 21.3% of the in-person voting across the county. The next four precincts are located inside the loop, including Precinct 404, around Trinity School of Midland, 403 Legacy High School, Fannin Elementary and Midland Christian, 207 Racquet Club and home south of Windlands Park, and 103 Alamo Junior High, Bonham Elementary, and other areas south of Andrews Highway and west of Midkiff. This is the section of the paper called Election 2022. This column is called Commentary. It is entitled Voters Decide What the Top Issues Are by Stuart Doreen. Today is Election Day. May the best candidates win. I have no problem with the healthy discussion of issues that has taken place in our community. This will not be the opinion of many, especially when it comes to the mayoral debate. The problem here is that neither candidate nor their supporters have been entirely above the fray about Hogan Park and other issues. I have been asked why the Reporter-Telegram allowed Robin Poole to run an op-ed calling for a discussion about the costs. I also have been asked to not write any more commentaries about Hogan Park leading up to the elections. The truth is, there are some of us who lived through the building of the Scarborough Sports Complex and the years of operation since. The Scarborough Sports Complex is a fabulous set of facilities. It also comes with a yearly price tag that is hard to comprehend. Had there not been $30 million left over when the complex was paid off, it would have likely required a tax increase to maintain and operate. Those of us around during the campaign to build the complex know that there was never a healthy discussion about operations and maintenance in 1999. There was never a discussion about the shortcomings of operating and maintaining what would become an aging dual stadium facility. As someone who reported on that issue, it was important to ask questions like Poole responsibly did, just like it was important to have a response just like the Quality of Place Conservancy members provided. It was also important for the Reporter-Telegram to get a response from city staff, which stated the obvious, and that there is no way that either side on this debate knows for sure the specific numbers. They also stated that there was a legitimate source for Poole's numbers, just like there was nothing inappropriate about the Quality of Place Committee's response. I believe city staff have been the best source of information for the community during these political times. They certainly have been a step up from those on both sides who have gone the extra mile to indict the other, including elected officials either inferring or flat-out calling their opponents liars. I have stated that if the Hogan Park project is worth doing, its advocates will have no problem explaining its value to Midland. I also remind anyone who still has an issue with Poole's commentary or the Quality of Place response that it is not the responsibility of the newspaper to squelch debate on this issue. Midlanders can have a problem that the Hogan Park project, an issue on no one's radar 3 months ago, became the defining issue of the election. I didn't see it coming, just like I could have envisioned critical race theory would be an issue of the day in MISD races. But we have been through this before. Mayor Wes Perry won the mayor's seat despite being saddled on the wrong end of a debate about buyout of a former city manager. Nearly 15 years later, it was hard to imagine why that issue got such traction, but it did. That's what happens sometimes. More recently, county commissioner candidates used the Horseshoe Complex as a springboard to party nominations and court seats. However, moving forward, how the Horseshoe is seen as the go-to issue of the next 5, 10, or 20 years is beyond me. Now we have Hogan Park on the city side, and critical race theory / social and emotion learning as the defining issues of the 2022 campaign. That is what the polling, the conversation on social media, and the candidate's own comments show. The electorate has spoken. here's my expectation. The Hogan Park Project, in some form or fashion, will take place. So those undecided for mayor and District 4 City Council are basically voting for the person they believe will be the most responsible on the issue and the commitment the city will put forward. MISD candidates have all positioned themselves as wanting to keep CRT out of the classroom. For some, it took a poll taken prior to the start of early voting to get them to change their tune on CRT. If there is a close election, you could be certain CRT, a non-issue early this year, will be on the minds of undecideds in districts 3, 5, and 6. When we ask for greater turnout of voters in local races, we have to remember we cannot dictate what the issues that they must pay attention are. That is not how politics works. 2022 is no different. So, for those of you adding to the more than 26,000 who have already voted inside Midland County, here's hoping you go through our election guide at mrt.com, see all the candidates' introduction articles, their opinion articles about important issues of the day, and the mrt.com forums, the best forums of the election period. See what they were saying about what was important 3 months ago and how that has changed, if it has changed. More importantly, educate yourself on the issues of the day, even if it is about CRT and Hogan Park. There is information out there, and nothing the Reporter-Telegram has printed should be considered lies or hit pieces. Some will argue that anyway. I get that. You can't make everyone happy. Let me also offer one more thing about tonight. As my pastor reminded me on Sunday, it is clear that no matter who wins, Republicans or Democrats, Lori Blong or Jerry Morales, or any MISD candidate, that God is still in control. He will remain sovereign. It will be his values and not that of some candidate trying to receive your vote which are worthy. In the search for a better community, we will not be everything we can be because of a park or Midland ISD program or any other government initiative. Our community will be everything it can be because its residents attempt to live a life that he deems appropriate, including loving your neighbor as yourself. This is called Early Voting Notebook. Early voting turnout is down 10% compared to 2018. Early voting ended with 25,023 Midland County residents voting in person. If one counts the mailed-in ballots, there were 26,083 ballots received by the Midland County Elections Office through Friday evening. That total was still more than 10% lower than the 2018 general election, which included races for U.S. Senate, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, County Judge, and Midland ISD School Board. The Midland County Election Office said the total this year, including mailed-in ballots received, is still more than 10,000 higher than any non-presidential November election or any special election going back to 2003, with the exception of 2018. The Elections Office also reminds us that in 2018, 48.15% of the electorate voted, an increase from 31.48% in 2014. If the number of people voting on Election Day is equal to 2018, then 39.03% of the 96,526 registered voters in the county would have voted this year. This article was by Stuart Doreen. Friday was top voting day. More people voted Friday than any other day of early voting, and it was not close. The Midland County Elections Office reported 3,644 people cast an in-person ballot. That total was more than 1,000 higher than any other day during the early voting period. This article was also written by Stuart Doreen. This article is entitled Election Day Voting Locations. All locations in Midland County are open today from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Annex Courtroom, 2110 North A Street. Centennial Library, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue. Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 State Highway 349. Downtown Library, 301 West Missouri Avenue. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive. Fellowship Community Church, 5206 North Midland Drive. Golf Course Road Church of Christ, 3500 West Golf Course Road. Greater Ideal Life Center, 301 South Tyler Street. Greenwood Baptist Church, 10908 Farm to Market Road 307. Holy Cross Lutheran Church, 5110 North Garfield Street. Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail. The Village at Manor Park, Cowden Clubhouse, 5212 Sinclair Avenue. Mid-Cities Community Church, 8700 State Highway 191. MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Odessa Country Club, Number 1 Fairway Drive. Presence Church, 901 North Midland Drive. St. Paul United Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive. Stonegate Fellowship Church, 6000 West Wadley Avenue. And the Orchard Church, 6112 North Big Spring Street. This article is entitled Pfluger, America to See High Turnout Amongst Republican Voters, by Ben Schaffer. Congressman August Pfluger expects Americans who have never voted for Republicans before to do so this election day. The San Angelo Republican and representative of those in Midland and Odessa said that throughout this election cycle, Republicans have been focused on their commitment to this country and said Americans believe in them because of their track record. "I think you're going to see high turnout amongst Republican voters," Pfluger said Monday. "I think you're going to see a very noticeable shift among Latino voters, not just in the Rio Grande Valley, but also throughout the rest of the country." Pfluger is holding an election night event at Max Barbecue in Midland tonight with Texas State Senator-elect Kevin Sparks, the Midland County Young Republicans, the Midland County Republican Party, and the Midland County Republican Women, and the Republican National Hispanic Assembly Midland Chapter. Pfluger also told the Reporter-Telegram that he anticipates suburban women and Black and Hispanic citizens to vote for Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives on November 8th. Bloomberg reported there are 220 Democrats and 212 Republicans currently in the House. The breakdown in the U.S. Senate is 50 Republicans, 48 Democrats, and 2 independents, who both caucus with the Democrats. Pfluger said that throughout the election cycle, Republicans have been focused on their commitment to this country and said Americans believe Republican candidates will lead the U.S. to prosperity. He added that Democrats don't have any leading issues to draw attention to that gives the American people confidence in their ability to lead throughout 2 years of one-party rule. "You're going to see candidates that are elected, Republican candidates elected in New Hampshire. You're going to see them in Oregon. You're going to see them in New York," Pfluger said. He said the key issues for voters this election cycle are improving the economy, reducing inflation, and crime. Pfluger said Democratic Party candidates have avoided discussing these key issues during their campaigns because their party is responsible for high inflation and public safety concerns. Pfluger said that just 2 years ago, the U.S. was working to secure the southern border, had a strong economy and respect amongst allies as well as deterrence for adversaries. That's what this means, is getting back on track and holding this administration accountable for the next 2 years, he said. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, November 8th. Jean Schumott. On Friday, October 28th, Clifton Eugene Jean Schumott Jr., beloved husband and father, passed away. He was 67 years old. He was preceded in death by his parents, Cliff and Helen, and is survived by his wife, Carol Abbott Schumott, son Michael and Jessica Schumott of Denton, Texas, son Brad Schumott and Jessica Schumott, granddaughter Beatrice Rose and grandson Theodore Harland of Salem, sister Adine Kelly and husband William J. Olson of Charlottesville, Virginia, brother Michael and Cindy Schumott of Amarillo. A celebration of life will be held Thursday, November 10th from 2 to 3 p.m. at Green Tree Country Club. Gathering in the ballroom. In lieu of flowers, the family prefers donations be made to the Westside Lions Club of Midland. Emmer Derek Cheesy Cooks. Emmer Derek Cheesy Cooks passed away unexpectedly on October 22nd at the age of 15 in Dallas. Emmer Derek was born on July 4, 2007 to Emma Spears and Frederick Cooks in Midland. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, November 5th at 1 p.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church, 303 East Shandon Avenue, Midland. Flowers can be sent to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Death notices. Epigmania Porras. Epigmania Porras, 85, of Midland, passed away November 4th. Viewing will be Tuesday, November 8th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with prayer service to follow at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral service is set for Wednesday, November 9th at 11 a.m. at Cherry Lane Iglesia de Cristo. Burial will follow at Serenity Cemetery. Arrangements are made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at heavenlygatefh.com. George Cheney. George Cheney, 94, of Midland, passed away November 4th. There is no service planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Kenneth Jim Andrews. Kenneth Jim Andrews of Midland passed away 11/4/22. There are no services at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Ramesh J. Patel. Ramesh J. Patel, 96, of Midland, passed away November 3rd. Funeral service will be held at 4 p.m. Thursday, November 10th at Nallie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Denisa. I'm reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 8th, 2022. State local offices on ballot today. It's election day in Texas and across the country, with both state and local races on the ballot, with voting locations open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Early voting ended Friday with 14,545 casting ballots in Hector County. Most races were either uncontested or decided during the March primary, but a few will be decided today. The Justice of the Peace for Precinct 3 features Republican Bill Bowen and Democrat Gerardo Azarte. Bowen defeated Freddie Redman and Dudley Graham during the Republican primary in March. Azarte ran unopposed in the Democratic primary in March. In the Commissioner Precinct 4 contest, Democrat Savannah Morales bested incumbent Armando Rodriguez during March's primary. Morales faces Republican Billy Hall. The elections that have unopposed candidates and are declared elected include Republican Kevin Sparks as state senator for District 31, Republican Brooks Landgraft, state representative for District 81, Republican W. Stacy Trotter as the justice in the 11th Court of Appeals, Republican Dean Whalen as the 70th District Judge, also Republican Lori Ruiz Crutcher as the 244th District Judge, Republican John Schrode as the 358th District Judge, Republican Dustin Fawcett as the Ector County Judge, Republican Brooke Hendricks as the County Court at Law, Republican Christopher Clark as the County Court at Law 2, Republican Lee McClendon as the Ector County Attorney, Republican Clarissa Webster as the Ector County District Clerk, Republican Jennifer Martin as the Ector County Clerk, Republican Cleopatra Calloway as the Ector County Treasurer, Republican Greg Simmons as the Ector County Commissioner for the Precinct 2, Republican Terry Lang as Justice of the Peace for Precinct 1, Republican Missy Walden as the Justice of the Peace for Precinct 2, and Democrat Elizabeth Baeza for Justice of the Peace for Precinct 4. Notable statewide elections include the race for governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, controller of public accounts, commissioner of the General Land Office, commissioner of Agriculture and Railroad Commission. Also, the Ector County Utility District Board of Directors positions are on the ballot. Running are Tommy Irvin, Margaret Burton, Stephanie Shaw, Will Kapoff, and Troy Walker. ECISD police want to bring new officers on ASAP. Protecting our kids. With three new openings in its ranks, Ector County ISD Police Chief Todd Heiner said they have interviewed several candidates and would like to bring them on board as soon as possible. The added officers will bring the total to 32, including 31 full and one part-time officer. The Board of Trustees on October 18 approved a $12 million budget amendment that included $472,500 for new officers and related expenses. Ector County ISD Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said, "The other items in the amendment were unrelated to the new officers." Heiner said the equipment includes a dependable vehicle, weapons, tactical vest, uniforms, name tags, badges, radios, and much more. He added that it's costly to outfit an officer initially, but much of it is a one-time expense, and they integrate it into their operational budget. "We have already interviewed several. The big deal is once we've interviewed them, we'll go through a selection process. We'll rank them based on the interview panel, and then we'll select who we feel are the best candidates," Heiner said. Candidates go through a comprehensive background check that is mandated by the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement. That agency regulates everything the department does, Heiner says. He said TCOLE has always required background checks, but this year they introduced a background check form that you have to validate that has a checkoff list of everything you've checked in a background. It is signed and notarized and uploaded to TCOLE to ensure accountability. "It's a little more work, but I believe it holds everyone accountable across the state, as it should," Heiner said. The new officers will offer better coverage for the elementary campuses and help with weekly safety audits at campuses. The audits take an hour to an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, per campus. Police patrol 45 locations in ECISD. Audit times vary according to campus size. Portable buildings are also included. "You're actually physically walking around the campus. You're physically walking around the exterior fence perimeter. You're walking around the exterior of that building," Heiner said. Heiner said they are usually able to recruit experienced officers. "However, regardless of their experience, we still put them through our own field training officer program," he added. It's a 14-week program that they have to go through. It's a two-part deal. We built that on the success of the officer to make sure that that officer has the tools that they need to do the job here for the school district, because it's a little different. Heiner said he has worked at municipal and school district police departments. It's just a different job. The difference is there's a lot more resources that you have here than you can supply to the students to help them that you really didn't have for the city, he added. You've got to identify what we can do to help this student. It's really teaching them about utilizing those resources to maximize help for those students, he said. Sometimes the students just need guidance. Sometimes they make bad decisions, and you just have to be there to guide them so that they don't make those bad decisions again, Heiner said. The training program is meant to help the officers achieve success and enhance their performance. On the same note, if that person is not what we thought they would be, they can get cut from the program. So it's a pass or fail type of program, but we gear it toward success. Usually when you have an experienced police officer that has some years of service, you already know that they know how to do the job, he said. It's teaching the candidates how the district does things differently than another agency. The pass-fail scenario is more for people who have come straight out of the police academy. We haven't had people that have applied with us that are straight out of the academy, Heiner said. At one time, there was a perception that going to a district police department would be easier than a municipal one. At the inception of those types of police departments, I think that it was thought of as a retirement gig where somebody could go. With the things that we're seeing on campuses across the nation, I think that people are realizing that you need a strong skill set, Heiner said. I think that's kind of going away for the most part. He added that he has worked at ECISD for years, and they haven't had that problem, but he's seen it in other independent school district departments. Heiner has been ECISD police chief for 8 years. There seems to be a lot more to deal with on school campuses these days. ECISD has been seeing a string of arrests for threats and students bringing weapons to school. He said he agreed with a recent opinion piece in the Odessa American that training is critical for district police officers. He added that police in schools should be embraced. There should be a good balance. I really think there's got to be a good balance. I really think that there should be some more emphasis on mental health as well, Heiner said. Nothing is above protecting our kids, he said. He added that this is coming to the forefront across America. Heiner said they are not just encountering kids, but young adults who are up to age 21. Then we're also dealing with the parents of the kids, and so when you think 34,000 to 35,000 students that we have here, you also have to consider the parents that are coming to these campuses. So we need officers that are well-trained, not just in dealing with kids, but dealing with the multitude of different areas, Heiner said. The 14-week field training has three phases. A mentor police officer is with the candidate. Each one of those are about 4 weeks long. The last 2 weeks are actually what's called the ghost phase. The ghost phase is actually where that police officer's with them, but they're kind of a ghost. They're just shadowing. They're not there to give them guidance. They're there to grade them. That 2 weeks is actually a pass or fail. Keep in mind, we also build in what's called remedial time, so that if that person actually has remedial time that we can try to use, that's actually calculated and validated to address any deficiency, Heiner said. If they have a candidate that has an area they need to work on, the department will use that time to help the candidate. And then we'll assess them again, and then put them back into the ghost phase to where they're being rated. So they have really 12 weeks to get their act together to make you know in this police department, for lack of better term. Then the 2 weeks is there for the field training officer to watch them and observe that person. Then, if they run out of remedial time and we haven't remedied the problem, they lose their job. Heiner said, as a side note, the chief plans to retire December 16th. He has his own business called Chief Pest Services. Heiner has been in the industry for about 10 years and in business for about 4. I've got doctor's offices, lawyer's offices, I've got medical facilities, lots of oil field companies, Heiner said. He also wants to focus on his children and grandchildren. I'm 55, so I'm fairly young, Heiner said. He added that he's in good health, which is huge. I've been the chief for 8 years. The work we've done, we've left it in a better place. I'm proud of those things and proud of those processes that we put in place. The field training program was one that I adopted. It was my idea. The Internal Affairs Division, that was my idea. An investigator, weapons canine. Those are some things that I wanted to improve and bring to the department, Heiner said. County to hear about Juvenile Detention Center. HOK Architects is set to open today's regularly scheduled Ector County Commissioner's Court to discuss the Juvenile Detention Center. In June 2021, the commissioners okayed negotiating with HOK Architects to build a new $25 million juvenile detention center near the Law Enforcement Center in South Odessa on the west side of U.S. 385. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said on Monday morning that HOK Architects will give recommendations about the juvenile detention center. Hayes said this agenda item is a presentation from HOK Architects and it won't be voted on. Because of the cost of material goods skyrocketing and affecting the cost of building the juvenile center, HOK Architects wants to make a presentation on recommendations they would make on how to stay within budget but deliver us all the things that we need, Hayes said. This agenda item and others will be heard at 10 a.m. Tuesday at the Ector County Administration Building Annex located in room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. Ector County Youth Center Director Kevin Mann said he expects cuts to the originally planned facility, but he knows the new juvenile detention center will create a safer environment for those housed there and the staff that monitors them. No matter the bed number, even if it's 32 beds, what gets fixed is the layout of the building, Mann said. It's safer and it's more secure. You are going to that pod system where it's one staff member to 8 kids. You are able to separate the kids. You are able to classify the kids. You are able to put your highest risk kids in one pod, your lower risk in another. You can separate by gender. You can separate by risk factor. You can't do here now because it's an open format. All the kids are out together and they are all mixed. That's what this new building solves, is the number one thing, safety and security. The Odessa American previously reported in August that 0 contractors bid on the proposed juvenile detention center. In the article, Ector County Purchasing Director Lucy Soto said that not only did the facility fail to attract any contractors, but those contractors who spoke with her informally said there is no way the county can build the facility for the $25 million that has been budgeted. Hayes hoped the recommendation from HOK Architects will help push the juvenile detention center into taking shape. It's a slow process, but it's a process that's going on in the right direction, she said. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths will ask the court to approve the purchase of 20 Highlight bulletproof vests and 1 kinetic breaching technology tool. Griffiths said during a phone interview on Monday morning, the bulletproof vest he's asking for are about $900 apiece. He said there are 19 deputies that are wearing bulletproof vests that aren't fitted for them. As far as the kinetic breaching tool, Griffiths said it cost $10,000. Griffiths said after the initial cost of the breaching tool, It uses 45 caliber blanks that are about $30 per box. That piece of equipment is pretty impressive, he said. It will save a lot of time instead of manually trying to break the doors that we might need to get into. The court will also consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a resolution authorizing the annual county grant for Odessa Meals on Wheels and a budget amendment to general fund, economic development, other general expense from unreserved fund balance for $218. Consider, discuss, and approve a fiscal year 2023 budget amendment to general fund, County Court at Law No. 2, Department Furniture and Equipment from unreserved financial balance, $1,316. Consider, discuss, and approve a fiscal year 2023 budget amendment to Law Library, new books from unreserved fund balance for $6,000. Consider, discuss, and approve a fiscal year 2023 budget amendment to sales tax fund, animal control, new building from unreserved fund balance, $25,000. Consider, discuss, and to approve a fiscal year 2023 budget amendment to general fund library subscriptions and to library e-rate revenue for $12,884.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.